From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is Which Way LA.
Is professional football on again or off again for downtown LA? Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. The owner of the Anschutz Entertainment Group, which built Staples Center in LA Live, announced today that his company is not for sale after all. And his CEO, Tim Lawicki, once called the most powerful man in downtown Los Angeles, is leaving the company. What does it all mean for AEG's plan to build a stadium to lure the NFL back to Los Angeles? We'll hear some educated guesses about business and sports and politics. Also tonight, we'll hear taped recordings of a training session for American Catholic officials on how to handle pedophile priests. That's courtesy of KCET's SoCal Connected. Later on To the Point, Pope Francis and the Church of Rome. First, here's the news.
Listen to KCRW's 24-hour all-news channel. Stream BBC World Service, NPR, and KCRW programs. Continuous coverage and accessible via our smartphone app or online at kcrw.com.
Armin Alney back with Which Way LA on KCRW. The Church of Rome looked to the New World to find Pope Francis, former Archbishop of Buenos Aires. Today we'll hear about his past life in Argentina, his theological leanings, and the challenges he faces in Rome and around the world. That's later on To the Point. First, this story. The big multinational sports and entertainment company AEG built Staples Center in LA Live. It has plans for a new stadium to bring professional football to downtown LA. But they were thrown into doubt last year when Denver billionaire Phil Anschutz said AEG was up for sale. But AEG's chief executive, Tim Lawicki, insisted they were still on track. Today, Anschutz announced that the company is not for sale after all, and that Lawicki is out of a job, officially by mutual consent. Jan Perry represents that part of Los Angeles on the city council. Good as always to have you on our program.
Hi, Warren. How are you?
Can you figure this all out?
Well, I kind of take it at face value, and I think that it will bring more certainty to the situation with respect to AEG as a company trying to acquire a football team, and the continuity. The people who have been selected to follow Tim Lawicki are both very competent individuals who've been with the company for a long time. So I expect that it'll be a seamless transition.
But the National Football League, which seems to be dancing around this with a different step every time the music changes, will be seeing a company that was up for sale. Now it's not up for sale. How do they know it's not going to be up for sale again?
Well, they don't know, but I think we're just going to have to take it one step at a time. So this is what today's development brings, and I see that as a much more stable approach.
It seems to me, it's unstable when the decisions are made so close to one another, first to sell, then not to sell.
Hmm. Well, you know, you and I are both engaging in speculation, so I couldn't give you a definitive answer one way or the other.
Okay. Jan Perry, we'll get back to you in a moment. Let me introduce David Carter. He's principal of Sports Business Group and executive director of the USC Sports Business Institute. Good to have you on our program.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Do you see this as a sign of stability?
No, I don't think it's a sign of stability at all, but I think the councilwoman is correct that it's just one more step. We may look ahead here in the next few months or whenever and find out that AEG is interested in parceling out a handful of those assets. Maybe they bundle the sports teams, or maybe they decide that they want to unload some of their content. And I think it's pretty clear that Tim Lawicki and Phil Anschutz, their goals weren't aligned. And I don't think that this was a project that Mr. Anschutz necessarily wanted to move forward with quite as rapidly as Tim had hoped. And I think it would really boil down to doing this valuation of the company, trying to figure out what it was worth, and then making these tough decisions that we're hearing about today.
How much of the problem comes from the way the National Football League looked at the way that Lawicki wanted to structure the deal?
Well, I think that's always part of it. But, you know, the NFL is first and foremost about making sure that they get the best deal for themselves and for their other owners. And I think when you're asking about the issue of stability, you have the league, the NFL owners and the potential candidates to relocate to Southern California are now going to have to take a little bit of a wait-and-see attitude. You know, I also agree with the councilwoman in terms of the fact that the remaining folks at AEG have great institutional knowledge. They are strong executives. But you know what? They're still not the face of AEG that Tim has been for such a very long time. So there's going to be a little bit of downtime, I guess, or maybe a recalibration of some of those relationships. But, you know, Tim was the face of the organization, but they're still an extraordinary organization downtown.
John Perry, back to you. What about Tim Leiwicki? You said he's going to be replaced by two people that are very competent, but apparently it takes two people to replace him. He certainly was the face of AEG. How important was he?
Well, he was, he is still, you know, very charismatic and a visionary leader who is very bold in his actions and a good relationship builder. And, you know, he's got a strong personality. Mr. Braverman and Mr. Fickrey have been there from the beginning, and, you know, this may be their opportunity for them to shine.
Tell us a little bit more about what you think the relationship is, if you have insight into it, between Leiwicki and Anschutz. Do you agree with David Carter that maybe Anschutz thought that Leiwicki was going too fast?
You know, I can only surmise. I mean, you know, we've been at this now for, what, 4 years? And, you know, where the city had been in discussions with the NFL for probably more than a decade. And so I think it all boils down to, you know, how much you pay on a dollar to get a team. And I don't think it's, in my estimation, I don't think it's any more complicated than that. Because the NFL, as the other gentleman said, is protecting the interests of the other team owners and making sure that the valuation of their teams remains as high as possible.
David Carter, it's my understanding that the way the AEG wanted to structure this was different from the way that such deals have been structured for other NFL venues.
You know, it did appear as though there might have been an additional layer in there that the NFL did not prefer. They really want their team and their team owner and the majority owner to be controlling every part of that franchise, from selling the tickets to controlling the sponsorship. And I think it's a little bit ironic because AEG on a global level has done such an extraordinary job of doing that, that if you were ever going to, well, I don't know, bend the rules or allow a quote-unquote outsider to do that and to do it at LA Live with this new stadium, you'd think AEG would be exactly the type of organization you're looking for.
Let me introduce John Rigardi. He's executive editor of the Downtown News, Los Angeles Downtown News, which once called Tim Leiwicki the most powerful man in downtown L.A., ahead even of Mayor Villaraigosa. John Rigardi, good to have you on our program.
Thank you very much, Warren.
So has he? Is he now less powerful than Mayor Villaraigosa, do you think?
He might be for right now, though, you know, with someone like Tim Leiwicki, we certainly don't know what he's doing next. There have been no hints or indications, but this is a brilliant guy, a master salesman, a master planner and packager and deal maker, and I don't think it would surprise anyone to see him emerge with something new, whether on his own or whether with another entity in the near future.
So Leiwicki then might go into competition with his old boss?
I have no idea. I'm just saying that I wouldn't be surprised really at anything. You know, given how much he has pulled off in the past, given that he brought this football deal, which a few years ago no one thought had a possibility of happening, given how far that he's brought it, I don't think anyone would ever count Tim Leiwicki out of anything.
Okay. Tell us a little bit more about how he developed that kind of influence in downtown Los Angeles. What else was he responsible for?
Well, Tim Leiwicki, he's an incredibly smart guy, and as I mentioned, he's really good at putting things together. What he's been really good at is creating these, you know, huge billion-dollar projects. Early on, he was the lead force in getting Staples Center, $400 million built, and early on in that, he had some early initial problems, a little bit of headbutting with labor, and the initial councilwoman rejected, you know, voted against the proposal. Tim Leiwicki learned from that, and then when it came time for LA Live a few years later, long before the city voted, he had the support of the business community, he had the support of organized labor, he even had the support of the nonprofit world and homeless advocates speaking out in favor of his project. He really figured out how to give everyone what they wanted and get buy-in for a project so that there wouldn't be big opposition from it.
So, Jan Perry, back to you. You were one who approved the deal along with the others. Do you think that Tim Leiwicki might, in fact, reemerge with another plan?
I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't have another plan already. He's boundless enthusiasm. He is a very pragmatic, hands-on person who has strong and deep relationships with most people he touches.
Let me go back to David Carter again at the Sports Business Group and USC's Sports Business Institute. There is another proposal for a football stadium, not in downtown Los Angeles, but nearby. Tell us about that one.
Well, again, I think what's happening today overall with the NFL picture for Southern California, whether people want to revisit Dodger Stadium or they want to look at other sites around Southern California, you know, I think they all have their opportunities. They all have their challenges. And you have to get to the point where the NFL believes it's going to be able to cut the right deal and make sure long term the franchise is going to succeed in this market and have the right ownership, the right management, the right venue, and go down this checklist of things. To date, you know, if the calendar suggests anything, they have not found that anywhere in Southern California for quite some time since the Rams and Raiders left. And so, you know, I think this entire region remains in limbo. And you have to get back to the fact that at some point, maybe you just have to embrace the fact that the NFL does not consider returning to this market an urgent priority. They continue to be caught up on a lot of other important initiatives. But I would go back to reiterate quickly what John and Councilman Perry were saying about Tim and how tactical he can be and how he has put together these coalitions. You know, sky's the limit for him, whether he wants to stay here in Southern California or take his prowess to the East Coast or get involved in other forms of sports and entertainment. So, you know, I think any discussion like this today that sounds like an obituary couldn't be further from the truth.
John Rigardi, back to you with the Downtown News. What about Ed Roske and Majestic Realty and his proposal for the city of industry? Do you think Lywicki might ally with him?
I certainly don't know. My speculation would be probably not, just because he spent so much time pushing this project, which has been the fierce rival of that. That project has also been bouncing around for about 5 or 6 years now. Gosh, if not longer. So as David said, it's out there. And as he also alluded to, every so often you hear the concept of a football stadium rising in the parking lot of Dodger Stadium. Is that coming up? So who knows where Tim could go?
Who knows where Tim could go? Who knows where the NFL could go? It seems to me, once again, that there's more uncertainty than ever. Jan Perry, without Tim Lywicki, presuming that he's not in Los Angeles, we don't know that that's the case. None of us really knows anything. We're all speculating, as you indicated at the outset.
Right.
What about the politics involved? You're leaving the council. Somebody new will be coming in. The council itself is changing in many respects. Will whoever it is that has to try to work this deal have to adjust to new political realities?
Well, I think whoever it is needs to adjust to the reality that we need new jobs here. And this project has the greatest potential to bring in 23,000 plus net new jobs. And we need to put people back to work here in the city. So, you know, for me, again, it's pretty straightforward. Whether, you know, Tim's at the helm or Dan or Ted or anybody else, the goal for the city of Los Angeles should be to put people back to work. This project is unique in that it had no city money. It was being built with private money. And that's what they learned from doing Staples. They learned from the first iteration and did better in the second round.
David Carter, with all that we've said about how smart Lywicki and Enchus are, we don't have a football stadium in downtown L.A. Is the National Football League playing games here?
Oh, I don't know if they're playing games. I think they really know what they want to get out of the deal. They want to understand what their bottom line is going to be. They're going to squeeze the deal, and they're going to make sure that they emerge with a great deal, one that they can talk about around the country with other owners and other potential venues that come up down the line. I think it's pretty clear that they're not going to do anything quickly in Southern California. I mean, that's an obvious statement. But at what point does it feel like Groundhog Day? And the people around Southern California, we've had a lot of great business leaders over the years throw their hat into the ring trying to get this done, all have faced obstacles and ultimately dropped out or been eliminated, so to speak. At what point does no one really want to play the game anymore in Southern California? I think that's something that is very interesting to keep an eye on.
John Rigardi, what about AEG and Tim Lywicki in other parts of Los Angeles besides downtown? Do they have influence beyond the Central Core?
Well, they have influence just because of absolutely how powerful they are and how many people they employ. But the company is headquartered in downtown. In fact, we did a story. Our Ryan Valancourt did a story last year. We analyzed their holdings and estimated that they have about $4.4 billion worth of holdings right in the center of downtown. So certainly they're more. Certainly they have a role throughout the city, throughout politics. But their concentration is absolutely here in the Central City area.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you all very much for being on our program. Once again, it's been fun to try to figure out what's going on and what might go on in the future. John Rigardi, the executive editor of the Los Angeles Downtown News, David Carter at the Sports Business Group and executive director of USC's Sports Business Institute, and Jan Perry, a Los Angeles City Councilwoman representing downtown Los Angeles, at least until July the 1st. Good to have you back on our program as well.
Thank you very much, Warren.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with Which Way LA.
You're listening to Which Way LA from KCRW. Share your comments about today's show at kcrw.com/whichwayla or join the conversation on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter at WWLA.
We're only back with Which Way LA. In January, under court order, the Los Angeles Catholic Archdiocese released voluminous files on sexual misconduct by priests. KCET's SoCal Connected will be running a program about its findings after studying those files. The program will be on tonight at 10:30. SoCal Connected studied all the files, found at least one accusation in 63% of all parishes, many of them in Latino communities. Altogether, 250 priests were identified as pedophiles. And the Archdiocese, of course, leads the nation in payouts to survivors, totaling almost $1 billion. SoCal Connected also found an audio tape of Father Stephen Rossetti conducting a training session on how Los Angeles church officials should handle such cases. That's going to be part of tonight's program as well. Val Zavala is the host of SoCal Connected, and it's good to have you back on our program.
Thank you, Warren.
Tell us a bit about this training session conducted by Father Rossetti.
Yes. Now, I should say this was conducted back in 1996, but nevertheless, and he has changed his policy somewhat, but nevertheless, Father Steve Rossetti is currently a father and a professor at Catholic University, but he ran between 1996 and 2009. He was the head of St. Luke Institute in Maryland, which specialized in treating problem priests.
So this was not then strictly in Los Angeles. This obviously dealt with priests around the country.
Absolutely. Priests from around the country were sent to St. Luke Institute.
Okay. Let's hear a bit of how Father Stephen Rossetti, dealt with this subject.
Major Superior called me up and said, Steve, I got this guy. He's been through 26 treatment programs. I thought he was kidding. I said, oh, really? He said, you really put a lot of money into this guy. Yeah, he's been in 26 programs. And I said, well, there's no sense sending him here because, I mean, it might get him off your hands for 6 months, but he's probably not going to get any better after 26 programs. So what are you going to do with him?
So Val Zavala, what sort of conclusion can one draw from that?
One would draw from the conclusion that they were struggling. They were very knowledgeable about all the priests who had all sorts of problems. And by the way, it wasn't just pedophilia. It was, picking up people in joints, and they call them pickup joints, and there was flashing and all sorts of problems, not just pedophilia. So they're struggling with what to do with these hundreds of priests. And what they decided, there were many options, but one option that we focus on is what became known later as the LA model, in which they put these priests into what they called temporary secular employment, meaning they would put them in a job outside of the ministry to see how they would do for 2 or 3 years after treatment, and if nothing happened, then they would be deemed okay and they might go back into the ministry.
So they were sort of on probation, but in the civilian community, if you want to use that term to describe the outside of the church.
Civilian or in secular jobs within the church. In other words, not in a ministry. It could be a desk job or whatever in the church.
You mentioned the other kinds of issues that came up with priests. Let's hear a bit more of Father Stephen Rossetti and his training program.
Let's say you take a guy who's been cruising the pickup joints, and you take him, you send him back to a ministry. Again, whom do you tell? Well, imagine if he goes back to a nursing home, and you want to go around to all the 85-year-old residents and tell them that your chaplain had a problem molesting minors, or used to cruise the joints, or has a problem flashing himself, You see what I mean? It's a tough problem.
So, Val, after that, what sort of treatment or process or handling did Father Rossetti recommend?
Well, after after treatment, he went through a variety of recommendations. One, he would say this temporary secular employment. And by the way, he acknowledged that if they should go out into the civilian world and get a job, that there would be no criminal background available because, of course, they were never prosecuted. So he acknowledged that, you know, the criminal background would not be available, would be unknown. He also talked about putting them away from children, or if they had a problem with women, keeping them away from women. Sometimes if they were older, he would say retirement is the answer. So it kind of depended on each situation. But he also acknowledged that many times bishops would want to be hard on these priests, and the priests would appeal to Rome, and Rome would say, nope, sorry, you can't defrock them, you got to keep them in and deal with them somehow.
Wow. I didn't quite understand the reference that was made in the last tape we heard, or last excerpt we heard, about nursing homes. Was that nursing homes where the priests might be old enough to be... I don't know what
retired,
what,
basically. Yes,
thank you.
Like you. Exactly. Mm-hmm. If they're old enough, you know, and they go to a nursing home, yes, precisely. So how much do you tell the people around them, you know, what their background is?
I see. So that would be one that goes back a ways and involving a priest that's old enough to be retired.
Precisely.
Yeah. What else did you find in looking through all of these hundreds of files that were released?
We also found that when it came to which parishes got the problem priests, that out of the top 10 parishes with the most accused priests, and this is in Los Angeles Diocese, the top 10 parishes with the most accused priests, half of those parishes were in Latino communities. So it's as if you know, the problem of priests were put in Latino communities because, as you know from previous documents, Latino communities were considered least likely to create a fuss, least likely to file suits or even bring the problem to the attention, you know, of the superiors.
Were you able to go beyond Los Angeles other than to hear that training program, which was apparently given to priests all over the country?
No, we focused very much on the thousands of documents that they zeroed in on the Los Angeles Diocese, which, by the way, is the biggest in the nation, also has the most abusive priests, about 260, and the one with the biggest legal payout. So this is really kind of a, you know, a ground zero for this problem, and we focused on the L.A. Archdiocese.
And, of course, yet another settlement for $10 million was announced just this week involving a priest who abused somebody after being transferred from one church to another.
Absolutely. This problem is not going away at all. And, of course, the DA's office is still looking to find, even though the statute of limitations has run out on a lot of these crimes, they're looking for other kinds of possible criminal activity that could be prosecuted beyond the statute of limitations.
What does Father Rossetti, whose training session was in 1996, have to say now?
We contacted him, and he said that his position has evolved over the years. He now supports a zero tolerance for any kind of child abuse and a victim-first policy. So he has definitely, you know, gotten stricter in his attitude toward this.
Okay. Well, Val Zavala, many thanks. The program, SoCal Connected, airs at 10:30 tonight on KCET. It'll also be available on SoCalConnected.org. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Warren.
Remember, you can join the conversation on our Which Way LA Facebook page. In a moment, Pope Francis and the Church of Rome on To the Point.